Excision number 23213, reel 17.
Major Potts, reel 17.
You've been to Malta, North Africa, you've been up country in Malaya, you've been to Aden.
Yeah.
To Australia.
Yeah.
You seem to have been travelling around.
Oh, yeah, America. Continually. And anyway, the time came when my 2.5 years with the Royal Marines was up. So, and it was intimated, and I was asked whether I would consider transferring to the Royal Marines. And I thought about it for about 48 hours. And I thought, no. If I go to the Royal Marines, I would be watched continually, and I would not be popular with my contemporaries because I might get promoted above them. There were too many ifs and buts, so I said no. And then I was asked, would I go to their officers' wing at a later date? And I said yes. So it was left in that vein. And I went home to the United Kingdom to Gravesend.
What was happening at
Well, my battalion, believe it or not, had just gone abroad again to Kenya and was coming home to Gravesend to be part of the strategic reserve. And I was to be a company commander. So we did, once the battalion was reformed, we did exercises in Stanford PTA, Scotland, and we did standby twice, once for the Far East. That was when confrontation with Indonesia. And then we did another standby, and I think it might have been for Belize or something, but we didn't go anywhere. And then suddenly we got whipped off to Cyprus.
How much notice did you have?
Oh, God. I think we had about 2 or 3 days, and we got sent off to Cyprus, and we were put into the Larnaca area. My area, company area, was North Larnaca.
What were the circumstances like there when you arrived?
Well, it was Greek against Turk, the usual old thing. And we were accommodated in schools, houses, and what have you in North Larnaca. Company headquarters and one platoon were in a school. And we patrolled and generally keeping the peace. As they keep the Turks and the Greeks from each other. And this seemed to work for quite a long time. We did have incidents.
What sort of incidents were happening?
Well, there weren't riots. No, we had sort of thing where opposite one of my platoons, we had the Bishop of Kittium's palace, and some priest came along and he said, well, your platoon's interfering with the bishop. And I said, well, very sorry, but we're going to stay here. And he said, but you see these things sticking out there? And I said, yeah. He said, those are rocket launchers aimed at your platoon there. And I said, they look like drain pipes to me. If you look out in 20 minutes' time, you'll see 4 rocket launchers being loaded by my men aimed at the bishop's palace. How would you like that? He didn't say anything, so we did that. And anyway, 2 days later he came along and he says, we're going to have a march and the shouting and screaming about your platoon being in this school. We said, okay, you do that. Half an hour before they were due, I moved the whole platoon and all the bedding and everything out, and there was nobody there when they came. And it was silly little things like this that we were fairly robust with them. If they put up a sandbag position, we backed an armoured car into it and it fell over. And they fired a few shots at us from time to time.
What did you do when they shot at you? Did you shoot back?
Went to see them the next morning and tell them that they were naughty boys, and we might be firing back one of these days. We haven't got our ammunition yet, or something like that. It kept them quiet. Anyway, they knew it all worked well, and then after I got that area sorted out, or we had sorted out, I got sent down to Ayas Feodorus. Now, this was awful. Ayas Feodorus was a mixed village near the halfway house between Nicosia and Limassol. But it was off the main road, and they were always throwing bits of gun cotton at each other and explosives. And it was a troublesome area.
Like
Belfast, and we had Swedish police there who were completely and utterly useless.
Why? What was wrong with the Swedish police?
Oh, they wouldn't do anything, and they moaned about everything. Eventually, one day, I got fed up with them, put them in their vehicle, and told them to go back to Nicosia.
How many of them?
Oh, six. They were useless. Absolutely.
What sort of population are you talking about in Ayas
Theodorus? Oh, I never actually had a count, but I should say about 500 on each side.
Roughly equally balanced.
About equally balanced. And we used to have a mukta's meeting every evening, i.e. the Greek and the Turk, and then there would be all sort of terrible, worse than trade union meeting. Anyway, we generally managed to resolve most of the problems. And we had an awful little policeman there called Sergeant Karamalis, and he was a terror. I think he was a villain of the biggest order, and he used to get the Greeks to pinch all the Turk sheep and paint them Greek colours, and then he'd say they were Greek. Well, we caught it at him. We caught him at it one day because we came around the far side. Anyway, I go out my Land Rover, my driver got out, and the signaller. No, I didn't have a signaller because my driver was a signaller. Another chap. And we had a Canadian next door with us in his Jeep. And Caramelise was with this flock of sheep. And I said, look, you've got to give these sheep up. And he said, I'm not going to give them up. Well, after a few shouts and that sort of thing, I ordered my blokes to the ground and told them to load. Anyway, Cameron Lees eventually gave up the sheep. And I was only reminded of this about a year ago when my driver, who became a captain in the UDR, met him. He said, we had some trouble in Ireland, but he said, I thought my number came up that day when you were going to shoot that Greek. This went on for 6-8 months. Then the summer came and we had to escort Turks to harvest areas and Greeks to harvest areas so that one side wouldn't do the other. And then we went back into southern Larnaca.
Were there any shooting incidents while you were in Ios?
Oh yeah, they shot at the CO one day. Yeah, it was a Greek shooting it, we don't know who it was, shot at the police post, and it could have been Greek or Turk, just to wake us up. And I was there with the CO, and the CO picked up this bloody little Greek sergeant and held him up above the parapet. And then the day we had a big shootout in Larnaca, and there was a lot of shots fired around the place. I never heard one of the bullets go by. Anyway, we drove straight into the police compound, and the CO went in, and I went in, and Major Ronald Ferguson went in, and we said, right, they're not going to have any more of this. The DO was sent for, because they had DOs in Cyprus, the police, or not the police, the Greeks. And we said, we're not going to have that sort of nonsense down here. You're going to keep it quiet, or we're going to get really rough. Then about a fortnight later, my driver came back 3 days and he said, sir, every time I go in with the evening mail truck to Dhekelia, there's a blooming Volvo car tries to run us off the road. And, you know, he said one day he's going to run me off the road with, you know, it's going to be a smash up. Because it was on a road and there was a bund either side of the road, about 10-foot bund. I said, oh, okay. So I went down and saw the DO. DO said, oh, nothing. I know nothing about the, you know, usual carry on.
The DO was the local civil administrator.
Yeah, he was a Greek. So it happened again the next day. So the next day, I said, I'll do the mail run to Dhekelia tonight. The Sergeant Major and I will do it. Oh. So we got in, we Volvo came up, started to overtake, and I whipped the steering wheel over. He had either to go into me, or he was going to go down the bund. And he went down the bund and rolled over four times, and we drove straight on. We didn't say anything about it, didn't report it, didn't do anything. And I never saw the DO again or anything, but we never had any more trouble.
When you were doing your patrolling, you said you did patrolling in Larnaca North.
Yeah.
What kind of scale of patrol?
Oh, three men.
What were they doing, just walking
around? Walking around, seeing that there was no movement, seeing just generally keeping up a presence.
Showing the flag,
yeah.
Were any of those patrols ever attacked?
Or? No, because we were blueberries, you see. When we first went there, you see, we were UN, we were British.
Yeah.
And then overnight, we became UN. So what we did, we took off our core beans and we put blueberries on and put UN signs on all the vehicles. The Greeks, the next morning, all came out and thought we'd all changed. They were very disappointed when they found it was the same lot.
Did that have any practical consequences, being blueberry troops rather than...
Well, I like to think it did, but I'm not sure it did. Well, actually, yes, because we got quite a lot of visitors. You know, we had personages from India and Pakistan and the non-aligned countries came and to see what was happening. You know, and it was a continual sort of thing that had been brought up on the at the United Nations, because we were on only a 3-monthly mandate in those days, and it was always a question of whether we were going to be 3 months or extended or stay. We stayed for whatever period of time it was in Larnaca, and then we went down to Limassol.
I mean, was there any change in the
No, not at all. We just remained in a skillings.
Carried on with your normal internal security drills.
Well, yeah, and we did it our way. I think I didn't have Limassol itself. I had the wine growing area. So I didn't get involved in... There were arms coming in through Limassol, and the CO had problems with the DO down there. I think he won his point with the arms ships had to go somewhere else.
Was there anything going on in your wine growing area?
Not really, no. We kept pretty good tight rein on that lot. They're lazy, talking about wine. They just picked their grapes one day. Mm. Once they got them in the cart, they sat and drank in the cafe for 2 days, so the wine... Really, we're getting stale old grapes. But no, we had no problem with them. They were quite friendly. I think as peasants, they were fed up with everything.
Yeah. Well, they wanted to just get on in peace.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we didn't, you know, we didn't interfere with them. And we had no stealing going on or anything like that. These were hill people going up towards Troodos. It was generally around the towns where the problems were. Limassol, Famagusta, Paphos, Nicosia, and what have you.
You mentioned the police in Larnaca.
Yeah, they were Greek police. They were not very friendly. In fact, a lot of these guys had been a yoker 2 or 3 years before. Most probably all the DOs were Ioka. But
so you didn't have any fruitful cooperation with
them? Oh, no. You know, because the Greeks were running the island. The Turks were only 30%. And of course, they could muck the Turks about. Every time there was a Red Crescent convoy of supplies for the Turks, the Greeks would then try and be nasty about it and start pushing all the stuff off the trucks, and we'd stop that nonsense. I think you have, as a UN force, you have to be very robust, and it's no good mamby-pambying. You generally find that the bully boy will always climb down if you're robust with him, but if he's a nasty little bit of work.
What was your mission then, you know, as far as the UN was concerned? Was it to suppress the level of violence or to try...
Well, can you try and make the towns or and the villages continue as usual? Freedom of movement, freedom of worship, freedom of government, really. Although it's still going on today.
What did the soldiers think about exchanging their core beans for the blueberry coming UN troops?
They didn't think much of it, really, after two or three days. After two or three cups of tea, they realised they were going to be just as harangued as they were when they had their core beans on. And there you were. None of the Cypriots... The Turks always tried to be nicer to you, but the sort of thing that would happen was, I wasn't there at the halfway house, this is another company, and they had Turkish, but it was surrounded by Greeks, and they tried, the place became absolutely filthy and rotten and stinking and malaria and a lot of tummy upsets. David Russell said, right, this place got to be cleaned up, which he did. And he said to the Turkish Mukhtar, you know, you've got to get all these drains undone, you get this. Now, I'll get down the fumigating people, and we'll clean this village up at 100%. And anyway, they did. And the Mukhtar said, thank you very much. Here's the bill for us cleaning up the village. And that was the way they went on. They wanted things done immediately
for them.
But when you said no, they didn't like it very much. And I had a water pipe incident where the Turkish Mukhtar said, oh, everybody's blowing up the water. And we knew it was the Turks blowing up their own water just to make a big... So I said, well, it's all right, the people who've gone out tonight, if you've got to think the people are going out tonight to do it, the Greeks, they'll all be dead in the morning because we've got a patrol ambushing there. Take them off, he said, take them off. I said, why is that then? Oh, we've got two or three men who will be walking through that area. So I said, come on. Your chaps that are blowing it up. We had proof, actually.
How did you get that proof?
Oh, I don't know. It came through someone. I don't know how it came.
And did you have good intelligence sources?
No, none at all. Well, only what the Turks told us about the Greeks.
Who told
us about the Turks, yeah. I've never had good intelligence in my life. I mean, you might as well get rid of all these people. DMIOs and all that, they never give you anything. Only what you get yourself.
What were they trying to achieve? Was this for propaganda purposes, blowing up their own...
Oh, so that they'd get more UN forces in their area, and they could have bigger farming area. I think they'd have a bigger farming area, and then they could take the crops from what the Greeks had. It was always trying to get one up on the other. And of course, as I'm sure you're aware, it was one of those things where 70% of everything was Greek and 30% of everything was Turkish. And of course, it never worked because there were never 30% of Turkish doctors, 30% of Turkish nurses, what have you.
Couldn't fulfill the quota.
And that was the whole problem of it.
Did you have any contact with other UN forces?
Yeah, the Irish Battalion. When the Irish Battalion arrived, we met them, we hosted them. All the British battalions said, oh, there'd be a punch-up now. I said, rubbish, you know, we said, we'd get on with them, because they're very much the same as our soldiers. And we had no trouble, except there was a funny incident. When the Irish came, I had a couple of men worked in the officers' mess, and Pierce Barry, who was commanding the Irish battalion, walked in the mess, and he said, hello there, Smithy. What are you doing here? And Smithy went red. And I said, you can't know Smithy's been, his mother's been dying in Dublin. He only came back about 3 months ago. She's been for 10 months very ill and lost doctors. So, Smithy, he said, he was my batman in the Congo. So is Percy Blake. So what do you mean he was your batman in the Congo? Hey, he enlisted, said he'd been in the British Army and left and got... What the little devil had done, he'd gone on leave in Dublin, got his parents to send all these doctor's certificates. He'd gone for 6 months in the Congo, came back, and then came back to us. Well, his only punishment was he lost his pay for the 6 months he was away. So then it transpired he was entitled to the Congo medal. He got that while being absent from the British. No, we got on fine. We played hurley against them. We played sport against them. And we got on thoroughly well with them. Never any trouble. They're exactly the same as us.
Did they perform their peace?
Yeah, they were good. No, because they weren't as robust.
They weren't.
No. We were robust because we were. Well, inner skillings have always been robust.
Did you have any special training for UN operations?
No, none at all. I mean, we were the first UN battalion.
Yeah.
Except those that had gone to the Congo, but that was a different sort of thing altogether. No, we had no training whatsoever. One day we had corbeans and our grey hackles, and the next day we had blue berries and the map of the world on the bed.
Had the battalion done training recently in internal security before you left Gravesend?
Well, we'd always done that, but I mean, we only played lip service, didn't we? Put out a bit of barbed wire, dispersal, we fire. I think that was pretty archaic sort of internal security. I expect we still do it in the British forces. I don't know. No, that was all right. And we did 8 months, 9 months in Cyprus, and then we came home. Back to Gravesend. Cheshire's. They had a lot to learn. Again, they were suffering from having been a national service unit, more or less, and trying to get back onto a regular footing. They were short on signals and everything else.
What about your company? Because you were a rifle company commander, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in Cyprus, and then I went off to be support company, yeah. Reform support company. Yeah, it was. We were in that time. We had four platoons in a company because we were, if you remember, at that period, we had three rifle platoons and a support platoon.
Yeah.
We had a section of mortars, two anti-tank guns, and I think we had two Vickers or something, or two machine guns of sorts. And I don't think we had assault engineers or assault pioneers. And when we were in Isfjordris, Mr. Carver used to come and see us every day, and we got on with him. Troops like Carver. Actually, as a general, he was one of the best generals I met in the service. He talked to soldiers. He knew how to talk to them. So many generals have forgotten how to talk to soldiers, and Carver could.
How do you talk to soldiers?
Well, just talk to soldiers in the normal sort of way, you know. Carver would come, he'd say, I'd like a cup of tea. And I'd say, go in the cookhouse, talk to the cooks. And he'd talk to the cooks, and he'd say, you married? And the cook would say, yeah, do you ever send your wife any flowers? Or how often many letters do you get a week? And how many children you've got. And, you know, when he left, they said, good bloke. He knows all about us. A lot of generals, how are you, my man? And gone. But he always knew who they were and would talk to them. And I had a lot of time for Carver, although he was part of the problem. You know, he said I should be court-martialed many years before. I thought he was a good general. He used to talk to them. He'd always say, about once a month, he'd say, I'd like to talk to all the troops you've got in camp today. And he would. He'd talk to them. 5 minutes, not half an hour ranting and raving. He's just saying, I know it's boring at times. I know this, that, and the other. But you're not going to be here forever. He was a good, good leader. And that's all you can ask for.
Did they find it boring being...
Oh, yeah, it was repetition. Repetition, repetition.
No excitement.
No excitement. I mean, yeah. The night the Irish took over from us in Larnaca, the local Eoka threw a few grenades around just to wake us all up. But we didn't take it. We didn't react. We wanted to get out of it in the morning.
What about the Irish? Did they react to that?
No, because we were still in command.
So you're up to strength. Were your chaps, by that time, assuming you had run through all your national servicemen?
Oh, yeah, they'd all gone. Yeah, yeah.
Were you short of specialists, or were you okay for...
Well, we trained our own specialists, and now we were all right. I reformed support company when we went back to England, and we conglomerated the everything, and we bought the drums and pipes in, and reformed. Then got the recce platoon going, and it was all fairly simple. And then we started retraining, but then. It was time for me to go again. I'd been back nearly 3 years with the battalion. And in that time, I'd been told I was going to the Marine Officer School. And so that was it. I don't know how much more you've got to the Royal Marine Officer School.
What was your job there?
Well, my job there, when I arrived, was the infantry rep on the officer's wing, but I took over the counterinsurgency side of their training, and I did that for the period I was at Limpson, 2.5 years.
Was that a major element in Marines training at the time?
It was a very major element because they had Aidan was going. They had confrontation in Borneo. And in fact, it was before Ireland, but Ireland was only just round the corner, and it was very rewarding. You know, I taught counterinsurgency, taught tracking. We did lots of exercises. We went to North Africa with Sandhurst, which was very good from our point of view. The young officers met the cadets at Sandhurst. I don't know that it did a lot of good for... they learnt very much going with Sandhurst because they were far advanced at Sandhurst, what Sandhurst did. But they were... It was good. They met people. They met other people of their own ilk. Some of them had been at school with them. That sort of thing. And I was 100% for it. The CO at Limpston was not very keen, but we soon got him interested. Well, he was saying it's taking 2 or 3 weeks out the course, and it's not quite the Marines side, but the Marines were going through a difficult phase at that stage. They hadn't got any gunners. They hadn't got any support. And the one thing the Marines always needed was support. Now they've got it. Logistics squadron. They never had that when they had to rely on the army for everything, and it was good to get to know people. And go on, yeah.
So ask, what sort of exercises were you running for them?
They did. The Marines did their thing. They had a base.